Welcome to the Shelter Footycast. Will Schofield, Mark Reddings, taking you through all the big stuff in the AFL of the week gone by and coming up ahead. Skeeter, we've got a Patreon now, mate. Are you excited?
I've never heard the term Patreon, but I'm on board with you, Scoey. If you take me to the promised land, I'm there.
VIP content, discounts, and much more. Backchatstudios.com.au to sign up as a VIP.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Shelter Footycast live from Backchat Studios. The Southern River Band boys here out of Thornley. Welcome, Shelter Footycast on Instagram. Footycast@backchatstudios.com.au is our email. Mark Reddings joins me after a big result in the Derby. Holy shit, Skeeter.
Wow, that was... No one saw that coming.
Another big F-bomb on us.
No one saw that coming. That was extraordinary. Rocked up to the footy and I was half hoping. I was thinking, well, let's hope that one side keeps this close so it's not a blowout. I was still hoping that at three-quarter time because one team had just knocked the other off their perch, but it was completely flipping the script. And I didn't see that coming. I don't reckon you saw it coming. No. And if you did, well, Ben Cousins actually tipped the Eagles and Elliot Yeo to win the medal. So he did see it coming.
Did he? Seven-year.
Clairvoyant Cousins, wow, are going to call him. So well done to him. But yeah, it's an extraordinary result. It's actually great to be there when, you know, sometimes in sport you like to see the unexpected. And I know if you're a Fremantle sympathiser, you're thinking it was a very painful watch. But I thought it was terrific to see a team that's been kicked from pillar to post able to show us something, and they did it terrifically well.
Before we get into that, Skate, did want to say a big thank you to everyone that came out to the Leadable Hotel for the Backchat Ale launch and the Derby preview. Matt Pavlidis, Josh Kennedy, you got out of there very quickly.
I did my bit, and given that I'm just remaining very quiet on the social front at the moment.
We broke a world record.
I was there when you were doing the hugging. And
were you there for that?
I was watching part of it, and it was like herding cats because you're trying to get all the punters in line. And I was at my car, which was about 250, 300 metres up the road, and Hammer... I don't know, obviously he was having a bye, but he was having a big night from what I just feel it in his tone of voice. I could hear him on the microphone screaming. It was like there was a murder going on there. It was going off chops. Anyway, lots of people came up to say hello, which was very nice. It was very kind, some of the stuff that was being said. I still don't understand why they like the stuff that we came up with, but we'll roll with it. And that was a terrific and very generous crowd. And thanks to Shelter and, of course, the lady.
Well done, Skeeter. Couldn't have said it better myself. I don't think we need to do anything more there. Will Schofield, Mark Reddings, Shelter Footycast. All right, let's get into this Derby, Skate, and break this one down because we both previewed it. I think I said Freo by 7 goals. I thought, and very happy, as you know, Skate, I say some stupid shits from time to time, but I'm always very happy to put my hand up and say I was wrong, most of the time anyway. I thought that West Coast last couple of weeks were a bit of a bluff. I thought what they did against Sydney was an anomaly, and then what they did against Richmond was against a poor side, and they were able to do what they like. I may still think Freo are a good side, so I certainly did before the Derby. And to see what West Coast were able to do, to break it down, the first quarter, Fremantle had the first 15 inside 50s to about 3 to West Coast, and they didn't kick a goal. Bailey Banfield kicked it into a post, into an open goal, one of them, a couple of missed shots as well. So 3 behinds, and then I think Elliot Yeo went down and kicked a goal off one of those inside 50s. And Freo were all over them. And I thought, well, here we go.
Matter of time, wasn't it? You felt that was the case. But while they missed opportunity, it's like you've seen a lot of matches where a team dominates territorially but can't convert. West Coast went down, Yeo kicks the goal. By the time they looked up at quarter time, they're thinking, they've kicked 4, we're still goalless.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have been a panic situation at that point, but there was a bit of belief growing one way and the other side was starting to question themselves. And what you saw on the weekend, look, I'll go right forward to the end of the match. I mean, Fremantle's defence hasn't conceded like they did on the weekend. Their midfield was good early, but there weren't too many facets of the game. They can walk away. As Justin Lomu said, they were smoked after about the 15-minute mark of the first quarter. So no excuses. I will suggest that they came to Optus Stadium perhaps a bit physically flat after a tough 2 weeks in Adelaide, perhaps mentally. Scully, you might be able to answer this, where you rock up in a game against an opposition that isn't playing well or hasn't won a lot of footy in recent times, and mentally you're probably not switched on. Is there a chance that happened with Fremantle?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you try to tell yourself that everything's okay we're all so close to beating two good sides on the road. But in the end, you come away from a big road trip with nothing, like absolutely zero, and that's just the facts. But for all week, they would have been trying to get themselves on the bandwagon of, no, we're still good and we just made a few errors in those last few moments. But in the end, they lost both of those games. So mentally, you're trying to bluff yourself. And so then when what happened in the game, where you get some dominance, you don't take opportunities, and then a side that you are tipped universally to beat. Okay, Ben Cousins picked you. He's probably the only one in WA that did. Universally, you know that these are all things players know. Like, it's not like they roll in and, you know, oh, we don't read the media and we don't. They know they're meant to win this game, right? So when in a game, when what you've planned and executed isn't working, it's a shock to the system, and the good sides can change it. But I thought what it looked like to me, even more than we'd see the last few weeks, they'd clearly scouted West Coast as a side that you could chip the ball around on. So from the very first sort of defensive transition of Freo, they chipped, stopped, chipped, stopped, chipped, stopped. And that in the past has given them a chance to come and defend behind the ball, right? If you move the ball slow like that, you can defend behind it. And it's why they've been able to be a good defensive side. But West Coast defended so well, their backs held up, that all it did was, I don't know, give West Coast the opportunity to defend. And then when they did defend and Freo didn't take the opportunities, West Coast on the other end were just going. And so for me, it's a bit of coaching. It must have been a bit of strategy. And then they didn't flip into go mode until 10 minutes in the last quarter.
Mm, yeah, and it was execution by the Eagles, which they've tried to play that style of footy, I think, before, but they haven't been able to execute. And there's a big difference between, you know, if you're turning the ball all the time, which they have done regularly in the past, the Eagles, that comes back to bite you. But I think they played their best game of footy for what might be 2 years.
Yeah, I can't think of a better one. Everything seemed to work, didn't it? Their back line, as I've mentioned, was outstanding. And I think that was on the back of Freo's ball movement, quite honestly. But their contested work around the ground, and that's not only contested footy, but aerial contests.
Aerial contests. It's like they're playing kick to kick in the schoolyard. They were flying for everything. Bailey Williams took the mark of his career.
Yeah.
Tom Barras was dominant in the air. Harley Reid took the specky in the goal square. They were playing like they were just young blokes having a ball in front of 54,000 fans. Most of them were on their side.
Those three that you mentioned, you could say another 10 of them. Freo couldn't win a contest. And if you can't win a contest, you could put a loose behind the ball, you can move the ball fast, you can do whatever you like. If you can't win a one-on-one instance, so yeah, aerially, on the ground, at stoppage, in the forward line, then you lose. That actually doesn't matter what you do. So look, I thought it was about as poor of a performance as Freo could have put forward. And the West Coast Eagles, should we start at the top, Harley Reid? Should we start there? Was he unlucky not to win the medal?
I don't have any issues with Elliot Yeo winning the medal. You know, 26-1, and I thought he was outstanding. Harley Reid was the player that provided the most exciting moments of the night. No question about that. And David Mundy gave him one vote.
You were in the box with David.
Yeah. He was giving the votes out, and it was really, I felt for all the judges, because although, let's be honest, it was always going to be a 3-2-1 West Coast situation. But yeah, to try and separate players and who had more influence and who was better for longer. Harley didn't touch the ball for the first, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Long part. So, and he had 19 for the game, kicked 3. Elliot was outstanding. I had no issue. Maybe if you'd given him 2 votes, David Mundy, would that have placated some of the masses? I don't think there was any anger from Eagles fans. I was just happy to win. But Harley Reid, just talking on radio on 6PR, did not miss David Mundy in a lighthearted way. And I like that. It was banter. And some people were saying, oh, he's being arrogant. He's being ahead of himself. Seriously, We need to see young blokes like this. And he's got confidence on the field and off it. So, no issue at all.
All he said was, I don't think Dave Mundy likes me.
Yeah, exactly. And he said it with a laugh on his face. I mean, good on him. Kid, I don't know. I was speaking to Glenn Jakovich about this yesterday. Chris Judd came to the footy club, didn't play the first game of the season, 2002. And, of course, after that, Collingwood, Wooshka, he went on. There's comparisons with what he produced in the start of his career. And I went through some numbers yesterday. Harley, I suppose, can be compared in some part to the influence and what he's doing through a handful of matches.
Yeah, just the moments, isn't it? Like the specky in the goal square, the specky, you know, we're at 30 out, the goal from the angle after the siren.
Centre square clearance where he just bursts through the centre square and just, it looks like a bloke that's played 150 games. And of course, as of today, first year players can get their contracts renegotiated. Right, so that comes into play. And look, the Eagles...
Well, how much are you giving Harley? Because it's not like West Coast aren't putting an offer in front of him. It's not like they're going to go, we'll just see how he goes.
But if you're the management of Harley, what do you do? It's a really fascinating...
I think it's... So I agree. Clearly, management's job is to get the most money possible for Harley Reid. So is that holding out and not signing an extra year? Or is that just doing a deal now? I think in the end, it probably is going to come down to Harley Reid. If he's really happy and you know the money stacks up, I'd be doing it probably. It gives you some security. You know, if you do want to leave, which I think he's no chance of leaving. I'll put that on the record really early. I think
he can leave whenever he wants to leave. Let's be honest. The contract situation is a beautiful moment in front of the media to sign a piece of paper, shake hands, and then in 2 years, if your girlfriend moves back to Victoria or there's an issue that you want to get back to your family, in all seriousness, for family reasons, yep. It happens. So let me ask you this question. You might not have the answer. The contract extension that can be offered to Harley, say of today, how long can that contract... It can only be one extra year, is that
one
right?
1 year, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, that's what I mean. He's on 3 years right now, which is a standard contract. Yes. You can extend by a year, I believe. Again, Skeeter, you and I are...
I didn't know the answer. That's why I asked you.
I think it's one extra year.
Okay.
So you can extend it out to four. So that's what I mean by, you know, the management of Harley will be saying, well, can we do a better deal after four than three? And West Coast will be saying, well, let's just lock him up for as long as possible. Because they would back themselves in by year four, they're going to be a much better side, and success pays a big impact in players' decisions, in my experience anyway.
So I'm just trying to work out, if you're saying as of now you can extend by one, what stage of this three-year contract or this cycle can you sit down after 2 years, for instance, say, all right, let's extend this by five. I don't know. I'm not sure, and you and I both have no idea.
We can go back to the drawing board and maybe figure it actually out, Skeeter.
Off air.
Now, Skeet, we... A couple other big performances. Look, from Freo's side, I thought Sean Darcy's return was solid, although what it did mean was Luke Jackson was going forward. He looked like his timing was way off.
Yep.
Running under the footy, double jumping, nowhere near it at stages. So I think that's going to be some pain that Freo's going to have to eat over the next few weeks. You're going to have to try and make that work, at least for a substantial amount of time. And
Jackson started in the ruck.
Yeah, correct. Sean Darcy on the bench. So that'll be just let the heat go out of the game a tiny bit with Sean Darcy, because he ends up having 30 hit-outs and had a pretty good game. He looked like he was doing some good things. He was clean. He was taking a few marks. It was just the Luke Jackson effect. You lost that a little bit, didn't you? So when you're losing and you lose poorly, people say, oh, that didn't work. You need to change it. They need to commit to that. Like they don't have another couple of options.
Yeah, I don't think it had anything to do with the result. I think it was, you've been through matches yourself, Scully, where you look at the scoreboard at the end of the game and you think, what happened here against a side that historically you've had won the past five, you beat them by 100 points the last time you played them. Everything that could have gone wrong for Fremantle did. But that's taking zero away from what the West Coast Eagles manufactured. And as a couple of mates texted me after the game who are Eagles supporters, they are now just one game outside the top eight.
I mean, boy, oh boy, they've won the same amount of games as Brisbane.
Yeah.
West Coast, right? So there's lots of things going on. Jake Waterman, very good again. Six last week, five this week. Has he announced himself as a key position player? I think people think he's too small. He's 192 and can clearly take a contested grab. I don't know if it matters, but if you're 192 or 196.
No, I think if he could kick two a game for the rest of the season, that'd be a fantastic year. To ask him to do those sorts of numbers regularly, I didn't think he'd be able to back it up. He did against a quality defence. We know that. So well done to Jake. He would have been in the reckoning for votes. And look, there's so many good players, including Tom Barris, who outstanding overhead, but there's other talking points that he's going to be involved with over the next 24 hours.
Well, let's talk about that one then, Skeeter. Tom Barris has been given a week for a dangerous tackle on Michael Walters, happened in the last quarter. I spoke to Tom about this, and hopefully this doesn't put him into any trouble anywhere. But basically, he said he's been having trouble tackling blokes. He said, mate, I can't tackle anybody. Everyone's breaking my tackles, right? And he said, I don't know why, but this one just stuck. And it wasn't a sling. It was just I was trying to tackle him, right? He'd been missing a lot of tackles, and so he grabbed Michael Walters and thought, I need to tackle him here, right? So nothing on the line. It wasn't like he was trying to hurt him, anything like that. So, look, from my first view on it, to me, it didn't look like a double action. It didn't look like a grab and then dump. It was Walters' momentum, who tried to break the tackle, who was spinning at the time that created the spin. You know, as the tackler, you can't just stand there and cop it. You know, like, because as I probably just said with Tom, he's had feedback, he's been broken tackles. So coaches are saying, well, your tackles are getting broken. So if you just stand there and cop it and Michael Walters fends off, then now you're in trouble and your position starts getting put on the line. So the momentum of Walters, the spinning of Walters, he gets thrown on the ground clearly. There's a bit of a ball first and then the ground. He has one arm free. And then a fair bit of carry on from Michael Walters. If you ask me, he's throwing his head back. He's rolling around the ground.
That's a lot of players do that now. And Jake Lever did the week
and
before.
And I hate it. Yeah. I absolutely hate it. I need to get it right out of the game. I can't have us turn it into soccer when someone goes down and they're throwing their head back. Because the whistle goes, Walters gets up and kicks the goal, no worries.
Yeah.
So if you hit your head, all right, get off. Concussion protocol.
No, I agree with everything you said. And I did mention this on radio yesterday. Players now, I ask, and having not been out there, and you have the split-second nature of it, the tackle, which obviously Barris has a weight advantage over Walters, there's a very fine line. And you say, you've been accused of maybe not sticking tackles in recent times, and that's not to say you put extra mustard onto that tackle, but it's going to be the reason this is interesting is because of what we saw with Charlie Cameron last week. And I was happy he got off.
Yes.
I mean, Lever, again, it's action versus outcome. What are we going here? Because the outcome was there was no outcome.
Correct.
He wasn't hurt. He kicked the goal. He went back, had the shot on goal. So
Tom Barris is involved in charitable work. He runs a business, a non-for-profit with Jeremy McGovern called the Wanderers Foundation.
Why you bring that up?
They help Indigenous people drive and get them back into the workforce. He's a father of two. He's a good bloke. He's never been reported before.
But you wouldn't bring this up unless you were talking about the Charlie Cameron case.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's happened, right? Yeah. So all of those things, are you telling me that Charlie Cameron's a better bloke than and does more charitable work than Tom Barras? Tom Barras never been reported. Like, he has to get off. He has to get off.
On what we saw 7 days ago.
He absolutely has to. So that's what the AFL has done. And if he does not, if he brings all those things up, which he should have the chairman of that foundation come down, he should have some of his mates come down, he should have written letters from the Prime Minister, and if he doesn't get off, it's an absolute disgrace. It is an absolute disgrace.
Okay, forget the Charlie Cameron case.
But you can't, the point. Can't forget it. But I can.
Well, but the AFL has made a point, and whether...
What's their point?
Their point was that there shouldn't be a character. There isn't. Under the AFL.
So don't make the fucking ruling by the AFL then.
Well, the AFL, it was the tribunal that put into... Obviously, now the AFL will tell us, and so will Chris Fagan, that the character reference or the characterisation of Charlie wasn't the reason he got off the charge. Obviously, the tackle that was laid wasn't to the degree that...
But they laid it as medium impact and as careless. They said that, and it said like a lower grade of carelessness. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Everyone's confused. But this will be...
Don't worry, I'll be running a very strong campaign this week about this one, Skeeter.
Well, I agree. I mean, if the bloke gets up and takes the kick, and again, Walter's head hits the footy first... Everyone is just confused as to where this ends.
Well, he has to get off. I'm not confused. Has to get off 1,000%. Are we done with the derby?
I think so.
Yeah, that was a good game. Liked it. 55,000 people there. First time Eagles have scored over 100 points back-to-back since round 17 and 18, 2018.
First time they've won back-to-back games since 2021. First time they've beaten the Dockers since 2021.
There'll be some sorry heads, and not because you've had too many shelters today. Frio fans would just be on mobile.
Oh, around the office.
And to be honest, like to be frank, with the West Coast bobbleheaders as well. Like there's a few West Coast supporters, Dan Const in here as well, just very happy with their own work, which I don't like that either. Like there's a real sucked in now. You're back to rebuilding Freo. Like there's a real
we're
angst.
Closer to the next premiership.
Yeah,
than you are.
I don't like that either. So anyway, let's keep moving. Skeeter, this was a long time ago. Bulldogs defeat St Kilda 124-64. I think that was the.
Thursday night. Yeah, that's when we were the lady.
That's right.
Yeah, it was. This game was all over very early. In fact, by quarter time, it was done. It was dusted.
Bailey Dale, who couldn't get a game the week before, has 39 touches, 15 marks, I think, and a goal. But Bevo couldn't quite squeeze him into the squad the week before. Like, you're absolutely kidding me. Adam Treloar's back in business. Jack McRae was dominant. He played a lot of inside ball with Liberatore inside. Bontempelli played forward a fair bit, kicked three, had 24. Dogs had kicked seven in the first quarter and it was all over. For the Leaderville Hotel event, I was hoping for a bit of a close game, maybe some cheering on in the last quarter. People had completely switched off from this one. And I don't think Ross Lyon would be very happy with his St Kilda side right now.
No, not at all. And it wasn't used as an excuse, but it was pointed out that from April 7 to April 18, the Saints played three games, one at Norwood, one at Canberra, one at Marvel Stadium. Of course, they wanted to be part of Thursday Night Footy, so they will point to the turnaround in time. They've got some issues with injuries, etc. But bottom line, they got spanked and there's probably no excuses, but Ross was just giving it just a bit of context from his behalf. They were terrible. That was their worst performance for a long time. I think Ross acknowledges that. For the Western Bulldogs perspective, though, you're right. They remain the enigma of the competition in my eyes.
So they're good now?
Well, we don't know. We'll find out again this Saturday in the Len Hall game against the Dockers when they travel here.
Right. So who they're playing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a bloody good matchup now, isn't it? Because Bulldogs are favourites? I don't know.
Dockers.
You'd have to pick Freo favorites. Though, wouldn't you? But then what we've just said for Freo, like.
No, I think for Freo it was an aberration last Saturday. You can't put down that. If that's their normal performance but now and moving forward, they're in a lot of trouble.
Well, sorry to come back on it, but why have Freo dished that out then? If St Kilda have said, oh, it's our travel, and is Freo's the two tight losses and then they're mentally a bit fried from it?
Yeah, look, I asked the question at the start. That could have been a factor. The way they play, you always said this. With Dockers, the way they play their footy, it's attritional, it's grinding. It can also weigh down the opposition, but it's also taxing on their own style of play. That being said, St Kilda, the feedback after that Thursday game was not great from Saints supporters. They were awful. And look, the Dogs were terrific. They played out of their skin, and if that's the template for them moving forward, then they should be pretty confident that they've got some bigger wins ahead of them.
We can't pick St Kilda up moving forward, Skeeter. They're in the can't tip basket for mine. Freo $1.78, Dogs $2.08, just for anyone playing along at home, and that includes Mark Reddings, who is...
Tipping wasn't great at the weekend, but punting was better.
Yes, and then 78, defeat Adelaide 75. This was a... interesting one. I mean, let's start with a thing everyone wants to talk about, although I will put on the record that Adelaide didn't deserve to be in this game. Essendon were the far better side, and it's not because of an umpiring decision that Essendon win this game. But Sam Draper, if you've ever seen a moment that defines the brain of a ruckman, it's this one right here. With 4 seconds to go inside his own D50, this absolute numpty decides to jump on the footy, belly flop on it. It's almost like he was trying to show that he was holding the ball. Like I've never seen anything like it. The clock ticks down. Umpire doesn't call it. Adelaide Crows. If there was the dissent rule, I tell you what, after the siren, there'd be a few dissenting Adelaide players. They went bananas. Doesn't get called. Essendon win by 3 points. It ends up being a really good game and a win for Essendon away from home, but... how do you say it? That was holding the ball, surely.
Yeah, and look, we got DMR gets on radio on Saturday. He said exactly that it was holding the ball. The umpire, for whatever reason, decided to allow a ball up, and of course the time expired. But as you pointed out, all the metrics of that game were Essendon related. They were winning so many of those departments.
More inside 50s, more contested ball, more turnovers.
More scoring shots, everything that was relevant was in their favour. So let's be totally honest, Essendon have surprised everyone with their ability to tighten up their defence, become a better side in essence. And conversely, the Crows, after that win over Carlton, at home, they are still winless.
Yes.
And their season now hangs by a thread. And
You can't see them playing finals. No, it's thread's gone. It's come off the reel. Just throw it in the bin. Gone. Done.
Which is most disappointing side, I think, of the season so far, along with maybe Brisbane.
Yep. Very good. Like it. So Essendon go to 4-2. This is a side that I've said I can't pick, and they've only lost two games. So that's how my tipping's going. Really bloody.
And they've got the Anzac Day match against Collingwood at the MCG. Thursday, there's always 100,000 there, but just had so much with Collingwood having a win, Essendon going well. It's going to be a beauty. But the Bombers, Brad Scott, what they tend to do is fall away in the second half of the year. But from what we're seeing at the moment, the likes of Merritt, etc., they are playing some pretty decent footy.
Yeah, they are. Look, I don't know if I'm convinced, Skeeter. Like, I don't have in front of me who they've beaten, but Adelaide clearly are no good. Right? They're no good. So they've won by 3 points against them. Nick, if you can find who Essendon's beat in the other three games.
Yeah, well, no, they beat Hawthorn. They beat St Kilda.
No good.
They beat the Bulldogs.
Right. So, I mean, we're not...
But you can only beat who you're playing.
Yes, I understand that. But who are their two losses against? They're probably against good sides. So, look, I'm not all in on Essendon. I think there's a few people saying Brad Scott's a genius and Essendon are good.
We need to give them some credit.
I don't think they're good. I don't think they're good. Certainly don't think they're great. I think they're okay. Lost to Port and Sydney.
Yeah, well, there's no shame in that. They're two very good sides.
Okay.
There's a game.
Yeah, there's a game on Wednesday. There's a game in 2 days.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Why is there a game
Anzac
on Wednesday?
Anzac Eve. So Anzac Eve, it's become a tradition of Richmond versus Melbourne.
Is that the Dreamtime game?
No. No, that's different. That's Anzac Day this week, Thursday. And the Dreamtime game is the Indigenous celebration, which is in the middle of the year.
Right. So... When did Anzac Eve?
Can I just ask you a quick question? What time did you finish on Thursday night at the Leederville Hotel?
Thursday midnight.
Midnight.
After the Derby, a little later than midnight.
There you go. Okay, yeah. Just trying to get a beat
on. Gage on the weekend. Yeah, no. Look, I haven't quite committed to
it. So footy's pretty close. Wednesday night, yes, you're right.
Collingwood 123 defeat Port Adelaide 81 at the MCG. This was a strange game.
Strange? They were down by 31 points, Collingwood.
And getting pumped, like all aspects. Port Adelaide could not have started better. And if you just had a little snapshot and you glance up at the TV like I did, I just thought, well, all over, done and dusted. Like 36 points down and all no inside 50s of Collingwood. About 10 minutes later, I looked up and Collingwood were in front. Like, that was just crazy. Magpies conceded 5 of the first 6 goals and then went whack 8 in a row to lead at half time. I mean, it was absurd.
They won contested ball by 41. Their pressure was an average of 183, which is pretty high given that the metrics they use. And of course, Nick Dacos, who is often the barometer for when they have wins. He spent part of his time in the midfield, part of his time in defence. In the second half, he had 21 disposals and 525 metres gained. So the more interesting facet for me is about Port Adelaide, how they had this ability to drop off. And it was a significant slide. The only bloke I saw in the match I thought was really just trying to drag them through was Jason Horne-Francis. I thought he was a player that was in it for the long haul and showed a lot of ticker. Losing Charlie Dixon pre-game at selection wasn't great. So they're firepower. But he looked sore anyway the week before. So, there's something missing with Port. They're a team that is very strong during the home and away season. I just have question marks over how good they're going to be long term this year.
You just remind me to come back to a couple of Freo things I just thought about in terms of people missing. Look, Rosie was poor, their skipper. So Collingwood looked to have found a little bit of their former self from last year. So they have a big win. I think some people thought Port Adelaide might challenge them, including myself, which they couldn't and didn't, and Collingwood might be back.
Yeah, well, they're always going to be, you know, playing so much footy at the MCG. They've just got too much talent in their side to not be thereabouts, and watching Bobby Hill get amongst the action and sharing the ball late in the game. They're a happy team. I know it sounds, but they're a team that is bonded. They're unified, and look, they haven't been playing great footy. But you can just see they're starting to get the wheels turning.
Carlton defeat GWS 117-98 at Marvel on Saturday. Some big games here. Patrick Cripps had 39 disposals. Kurnell Mackay, they had 11 or 13 shots between them. They kicked multiple bags apiece. I don't think you can beat Carlton when you give that many scoring shots to Carlton. And GWS, look, although they led for a large part of this game, it was sort of they were making the most of their opportunities for the first part, and then they stopped doing that and Carlton started taking over.
Absolutely. And look, the outs for both sides were significant, but Carlton won centre square clearances 22-8 and scored 41 points. So that's an indication of their dominance. At times, I was at the ground at Optus Stadium preparing for the derby. I went downstairs to do a couple of interviews, and the Giants led by 3-plus goals. I came back and they were down by 3-plus goals. And Carlton, able to turn that match around. And, yeah, that's a big win for them. Interesting off the back of that, for the Giants, they will lose, will have, in terms of MRO with Toby Green. That's also one that's going to be fascinating because he's been offered time. Jesse Hogan, I think, has been offered time as well.
Have you seen that with Jesse Hogan?
Yeah, I saw that. It was a
punch.
Yeah, put it this way, I'm more content to give Jesse Hogan time than say Toby.
Was it off the ball? I haven't seen.
Yeah, it's in the goal square. So yeah, it's worth having a look at.
Well, the Toby Green one, mate. From what I've seen, ball kicked up, Toby Green running with his eyes on the footy for almost all of the time, and as he jumps, he sort of looks like a player that can change his body. It's why he's so good. As he jumps, he looks and sees a player coming and changes his body. And does he make contact with the head? Yes. I don't think you can argue that. Is it incidental and just a part of, if his eyes stay on the footy the entire, I don't think this is a Peter Wright one, is it?
No. Clearly given the MRIs only give him, I think it's a week. So if people are talking the Toby tax, I feel more sympathy for Toby than Jesse. If Jesse used his fist, then he's going to get some time, and that's the lie of the way it goes. But I felt a bit for Toby, and I wonder whether they will challenge. But his record's indifferent, to say the least. Toby,
I think we'll definitely see a challenge from either Barras, Green, or Hogan.
Yes,
all three of them. Maybe. Yeah. So it could be a long day for
David. Exactly. And what on Blues, though, Sam Walsh outstanding as well. They've got a...
They've proven that when they're down, they can turn a game around, which is such a characteristic we've seen from Collingwood over the last couple of years. Yeah. They can find a way to win. And they've done that so many times this year. So, and then it's real.
I've still got these little doubts about Carlton, but...
What part of the game?
I don't know what it was. I saw some signs that I thought against Fremantle that they looked a little vulnerable. Maybe they were missing. Again, Walsh wasn't playing that game. So that he's come back in. And
he's just a midfielder.
Well, okay.
It's a good one.
Pretty good one. And anyway, play on.
Geelong defeat Brisbane in a dour affair in the wet at the Gabba.
Didn't see this one, I'll be brutally honest with you.
Do you think I did?
No, you didn't either because we're both at the Derby. But... This again, just looking at some of the numbers from this, it was a strange game. And bear in mind, Tom Stewart, concussion. So he's going to miss the game against Carlton this week, which is significant. But you've got to give credit to Chris Scott and what he's done with them. And it was a grinding affair. It wasn't, Hawkins didn't dominate, Dangerfield, Cameron, they weren't huge.
From what I've seen in the coverage of it, it sounds like Geelong not only played the weather better than Brisbane, but they made some coaching moves, Geelong, to make this one a win for them. They lost Tom Stewart, subbed out with concussion, so he will miss...
Carlton.
I always get confused here, but I think he's guaranteed to miss next week.
Yeah.
Given that... Some guys have been subbed out, and then sometimes we're asking questions at the back end of the week. I don't know. Tom Stewart's done for a couple of weeks. Thanks, Mark Reddings. Max Holmes was apparently pretty good. 24 off
Stingle,
that.
Guthrie... Duncan, the veteran.
So Brisbane are now 0-3 at the Gabba after going 13-0 last year. That is something you would not read about whatsoever.
And that all of this adds up to the fact that they are in my mind, not going to be finishing top two, which is where
probably you can't now.
Yeah, you're probably looking at where you need to finish as an interstate team, particularly Brisbane and from WA and maybe South Australia. But you need that top two to give yourself the best possible chance, don't you?
Feels like everything's going wrong for them. I'm sure they would have liked a slick, dry night to really take Geelong on and expose them through their ball movement. But you get a wet night. You know, Geelong got a few more grinders in their team, perhaps, and maybe some more experienced heads that can play that weather a bit better. Let me tell you, Geelong, they know what to do in the wet down there. So
that's a huge win, though. I mean, Geelong, yeah, they're the only unbeaten side in the competition. So
they're the best side.
At the moment, they are.
They're the best side in the comp.
At the moment, absolutely they are. Yeah, there's the numbers say it.
Well, you can only beat who you can beat, Skeeter.
That's what I'm saying. They're the best side in it at the moment.
So if you... Well, the grand final is next week. They win the grand final.
No, sorry, win it. But the best side in the competition at the moment.
Who's no, they're the best record.
Yeah, best record. Well, that's the best side.
It's a different thing. No, it's not. Okay.
Well, they're the best side then. Yeah, so I think they're the best side. Who's the best side if you don't think they are?
My best side would be someone that would win the grand final tomorrow.
You ask me now, who's the best side now? I said Geelong is. Who do you think the best side is?
Collingwood would win the grand final tomorrow, I reckon. And Carlton wouldn't be too far behind them. And I'd have Geelong fourth or fifth behind GWS, probably Sydney.
Oh, wow. You don't rate them at all?
Nah.
At the moment, the numbers say they're the best side of the comp.
Okay.
But you're saying that if...
At the moment, they say they're on top of the ladder. It doesn't say they're the best side of the comp.
At the moment, it does. It's a fact. You can't dispute they are the best. They're unbeaten.
No, I can't dispute they're on top of the ladder. You're dead right. They are definitely on top of the ladder.
They're not the best side in the team competition at the moment.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Keep going, you numbnut.
Oh, that's good stuff. All right, can we move on?
Oh, I'd love
to. We never saw this game, so we can't keep talking about it. Clearly, that's why we're talking about other bullshit. Sydney defeat Gold Coast.
This was Pooparama as well.
110-57. Gold Coast are no good. They're no good.
The Washington Generals of the AFL. Though, as soon as they leave, you know the Washington Generals.
No, I don't.
Well, so the Harlem Globetrotters used to do a travelling, touring. Right. They used to travel around. They used to win. Whoever they used to play against? The Washington Generals. And so the Washington Generals are like cones, which, you know, around the basketball court. And I'm saying when they leave the Gold Coast, by and large, they just don't fire a shot. We saw it against the Bulldogs, who are, Ballarat. Sydney's a good, very good side, to be honest with you. So that being said, they had some chances in the second quarter to really press, but after half time, their pressure metrics just went, and Sydney, they're a good side, and they're very hard to beat in Sydney the best of times.
I don't think it's a really hard thing to come to terms with. The Gold Coast are just not very good. And I keep saying all this stuff about their midfield and how good they are and the potential and all this bullshit. It's the same old Gold Coast for mine. And I don't think they'll play finals this year. Grundy was dominant, 24 disposal, 11 tackles and a shitload of hit-outs. 200th game.
Yeah.
So that was
best game, I think, they'd say for his new club. But what about this? 90 points Sydney kicked off turnover.
Wow.
That's
a lot.
That's huge. The second best return.
They kicked 110.
I know. That's their second best return in their past 5 years. And they kicked 64 points off forward half turnovers, which is their third best in the last 10 years.
I reckon their best would have been the West Coast game last year.
Would there have been turnovers in that one? Or just been they just got the footy and play with it?
Did what they wanted.
But just quickly, the Swans kicked 5-4 in the first half, 12-4 in the second. So in a nutshell, Scully, they just got hold of the Suns after the main break. And I guess it just brings into question as well, a bit about, and I haven't done my maths on this, but teams coming off a bye, which has been a bit of an issue previously. Collingwood coming off a bye. They were very good against Port Adelaide after a slowish start.
Yes.
Swans were not bad, but they finished really well.
Yes.
They were off a bye, weren't they?
Yes.
I'm trying to think of the other teams that came off a bye, but it's a weird one because the bye has come early this year. For some clubs, obviously with injuries, it was imperative. But I just know, particularly with the Sydney game, having had a breather, they had a bye last week, didn't they? Please tell me they did. Yeah, that they just finished all over the Suns.
Melbourne and Richmond both had the bye, playing each other.
There you go.
So we don't have to worry about that too much. West Coast travel to Gold Coast this week, and Michael's going along there thanks to TASA, Travel and Sports Australia. I'm not going to claim this one. Sometimes I'll come out and claim this sort of, oh, this guy said this, but right. after the Richmond win, I was on 6PR and I was just running my mouth about all of a sudden. And Paps asked me this question, you know, do you think West Coast, how good are West Coast going? And I said, I just looked at the fixture and I said, I think including this game they've just won, they can win three of the next four. So it was Richmond, which they'd won. I thought they'd lose Frio. And so then I thought they could beat I think they can beat Gold Coast.
Gold Coast.
And then they have Essendon at home, which I think they can beat as well.
And then there must be another one in the East.
Three of the four, including the Richmond game. Sure. Yep. So I think like they could have three wins in a four-game span, and they've done Frio. So all I have to do is beat Gold Coast or Essendon. And I'm back in, I'll pull it back out of the annals of history and say, look at Scully, he's done this and that.
That's like Carl, wrenching. Oh, he reiterates my preseason prediction. Everyone goes, what was your preseason prediction, Carl? I said that Jake Waterman would have a good start.
All this shit
you guys come with, seriously. Spew up. We all use, so you're saying if they can beat the Gold Coast.
I'm right, and I'm a legend. Legend of the game, Will Schofield. Hawthorn, 113 defeat North Melbourne, 68. Wow, you had to call this, so I must have been brilliant.
No, I was 6 hours stint on radio. It was fantastic.
Yeah. You exposed at the market.
I was exposed just trying to identify players that I hadn't seen all year. That's why I was exposed. Looking at blokes and thinking, who the hell is that? We've got Newen for North Melbourne.
Dickie
Newen. You've got all these blokes I've never heard of. I've got to say, seriously, some of these blokes running around and at Marvel Stadium, and the skill level of North Melbourne, in all seriousness, at times was, in fact, both teams, after half time, it became such a grind. I think it was 37 points. It was going to be a Hawthorn win from about midway through the first quarter.
Right.
I've got to say, Nash and Newcomb, they were the stalwarts of their midfield.
Well,
which has
been both poor this year, yeah, really poor.
Yeah, true. And I really liked Dylan Moore, who's been a goal kicker for them, had kicked four yesterday.
Yep.
Look, their defence stood up really well. Unfortunately for North, I mean, when they go forward, they've got one bloke to kick to, and that's it. That's Nick Larkey. He's the only guy that they can really go to. Defensively, they look skinny. North Melbourne, they've got some good young kids, and Sheezles gets a lot of the footy.
We know they're no good, though. We know that.
That's what I'm saying.
They've got no back line.
McKercher, Sheezle, they've got good young kids. They've got no back line. It is bereft of anything against a quality forward line. And their forward line itself, Nick Larkey, said he's going to stay there until they, to be part of a premiership at a club to show his loyalty. He's been ambitious.
Mark Redding's top operation, sort of, that sort of age when he wins next premiership.
I tell you what, that is loyalty to the nth degree to say he's going to stick with North, because he's a player who's picked up his 100th game yesterday, pick 73. Yep. In the draft. So he's been a tremendous success story for North Melbourne and the AFL in that sense, but he's going to, at some stage, look at the prospect.
He's being rewarded. They're not paying anyone else.
Of course. But they pay? So why couldn't you get, say, $800,000 playing for a good side?
Yeah, he could.
Yeah, that's my point. And you don't want to go through your whole career. Not saying it's going to happen, but gee, it looks a long way off after yesterday. Hawthorn win their first game. Pressure comes off Sam Mitchell. And as you said, I think you said once the mouth guards come out at the start of the week, you knew that. And they were playing North.
He knew they were playing North. He knew he was getting out of the response.
Yeah.
Who have they got this week? That's probably the question. It's like, can they do it again? They've got Sydney at the MCG. So
good luck.
Yeah, good luck to you. Will Schofield, Mark Rennie, Shelter Footycast. Checking your watch a bit. Have you got someone about this?
Well, I've got already done one job. This is the second. I actually got another job as well. So I just think it commitment. So I'm just doing the spreadsheet, as you say, Scully. A battler trying to make ends meet.
Don't worry. You sit next to one. Don't worry about that. Come back to Freo thing. So I said, I just want to come back.
Yeah.
We didn't really mention Jai Amos injured in the first.
Yes, concussion.
I didn't want to sort of fly past it and think, oh, well, Freo, we're just all good. Like they lose their best forward 5 minutes into the game. And certainly it wasn't an incident that is reportable, but
it wasn't one that I don't think influenced the, I don't think it influenced the result myself.
No, it didn't.
Didn't help them.
It didn't, but it did, because Freo couldn't connect inside 50. They had three or four where one specifically that's in my mind, James Ash came through the middle there after a couple of handballs, no one near him, and not one forward was coming at the foot. That's what Jai Amos does.
He does. A lot of them lead back.
Yeah, he's their up guy. They lost that, which that's not why they lost, but it's significant. And Hayden Young spent the last 20 minutes of the game on the boundary with hamstring iced with a tight hammy. So, bit of a watch and act on that one, Sked. I just did want to mention that.
No, true. That's a good call. But by the same token, inside 50 count was 48-40 in favour of the Eagles. So they only went inside 40 times. And I think you mentioned in the first quarter there might have been 16.
Yep.
So those numbers quickly got changed around. The Dockers, I expect to, you know, I say it, a very fierce response against the Bulldogs next week. But that, you know, it was an enjoyable night at the footy, not because necessarily the Eagles won, but because it's nice to go to a game and not have predictability. And that was that was a surprise for, I think, every person at the ground. What happened?
Agree. G'day, blokes. This is some user feedback for us, Skeeter. So just get to strap yourself in, mate. Footycast at backchatstudios.com.au. If you want to send us an email, we'd love to hear from you. G'day, blokes. Fantastic show. Love your work. The Eagles are obviously starting to show signs of being a decent footy club again. Obviously, their skills and game plan has improved and they seem to be going in the right direction. Bit more of a statement here. Don't worry, we like those here on this show. But Scully, you can probably talk to this more. I think one of the biggest things the Eagles have changed is their eagerness to get around one another. The past two seasons have been absolutely shit house due to losses. But what pissed me off more was the boys not flying the flag when their teammates would get touched up, not getting around each other after 1% or a good moment, having no bastard about them. You look at Collingwood last year, after a smother, the entire team would get around the bloke and it was infectious. This season, the Eagles have shown that the culture is getting back to where it should be and they are showing a bit of dog about them, playing free, happy and for each other. Have you heard of this being talking point in the off-season? Get some sun on those pins, Mark Reddings. Get a dog up, yeah? Up the bloody coasters. That's all. Get some sun on those pins.
I ain't even seen the pins, you weirdo. Seriously, I know they're average. And Scully just decides to highlight them. That's okay. I'll roll with it. They get me from A to B.
That's brilliant stuff. Look, I noticed it. There was one thing on the weekend. Someone came at Liam Duggan. There's some little incident down the left-hand side of the ground, the non-city end. What is that? What end of Optus Stadium is that? Is that the Burswood end? What do you call that?
Belmont Course Racecourse is behind that end. Okay. Is that what you're saying? That
so there's the city end.
Yeah, and the other side is, well,
the mountains, is it? Is that the,
no, well, it's towards ranges. Belmont Park. Okay. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, so that end, someone came and pushed Liam Duggan and half the team came around and got around, started ripping them off and pushing and shoving, which I know does nothing, skating. You don't really like it that much, but it's just showing that you're there for your mates. Have I heard about it being talked about more in the off-season? Maybe not, but it's definitely something you can see that this is a very, like, this is a very different group. Like, when I go down into the rooms, I don't know half the boys. You know, I don't know half the boys. Never, all of them have got there since I left the footy club, and they've got, like, a bunch of them that, like, a big group of guys coming through and trying to build it, and that not only they're together, but then the senior players feed off that energy and it kind of brings everyone back together again. So I think it's a good call. I think it's a good email.
Yeah.
And especially the pins.
And when you talk about flying the flag, and part of that comes when you're playing better footy as well. Your confidence is up. I mean, it's pretty hard to be, you know, getting in someone's grill when you're down by 70 or 80 points.
Yes.
If, you know, it feels a bit, you know, incomplete, the fact you're pushing yourself in that direction. But, you know, you're playing a bit of footy. I think you're more confident in your body language, all that stuff. So, yeah, good shout. And may it continue. May they, you know, get to 5 to 7 wins this year.
Yes. Okay, this one. G'day, fellas. This is sent off while watching the North game. Having a glass of water as the Backchat Ales haven't arrived yet, so Scully sorted it out. I can confirm just a couple of little delays. They're in the mail at the moment, the Backchat Ales. People have ordered them, Skate. They're coming out to them.
Okay, fair enough.
Just giving you an update. With plenty of talk last year about West Coast splitting the Harley Reid pick, which they didn't end up doing and appear to have gotten it right, at what point do we consider splitting the 2022 pick a disaster? I feel like Jimby is fine, massive unit, but does he have the class to ever become an AA type blue chipper? And as much as Scully thinks Elijah Hewitt could possibly be the second coming of Chris Judd, okay, Jesus Christ, we won't see him this year, and Harry Sheasel is already a gun of the competition, currently first in the league for effective disposals, but not just chippy, 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 sideways, nothing. He's third in the league for metres gained at 84% kicking efficiency. Seems like Sheasel and Reid would be the best quinella of under-20 talent in the league, and you could really launch around maybe a Rosie Butters type situation. What are your thoughts? Thanks from Simo, north of the river.
Thank you, Simo. Yeah, I think it's a bit early to make a judgment call on the combination of Hewitt and Jimby. We know Jimby's making the development. Whether he in himself will be a player, say an A-list player, you know, time will tell, but he's showing good signs and he's working, and Hewitt's still injured. So, yeah, Sheasel's been terrific. I don't have any major concerns about the Eagles having those two players and them providing 10 years service each. So
it's not a terrible point. It's not a terrible point.
No, I don't think it's a bad point. But you know what the greatest thing in footy is? It's hindsight. Mm. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. If you can look back and say, well, Sheasel, if you hadn't split the pick and Sheasel comes to the Eagles, for instance, there's a lot of what ifs. And history will judge whether the West Coast have made the right choice. And look, I think Jimby's been a success story with still a heap of growth left in him, and still trying to work out what he's going to be as a footballer. To be honest, from just an outsider,
I'd like him off a back flank.
Yeah, well, there you go. If that's the case, so be it. And for Hewitt, I know you did mention Chris Judd in some language early in his career. I've since likened Harley Reid to Chris Judd, which is probably at the moment a little closer, just because we've seen more of him.
So you're more right than me.
Well, only marginally, because we've seen Harley do it, and Elijah we just haven't seen enough of.
Yes.
But I know.
Two Chris Judds would be nice in the same time.
Good question. I think, though, the Eagles, I don't think you can put a hammer to them over the selection of Jimby and Hewitt as that split pick.
That's us, Skeeter, done for today. Trying to figure out whether we'll record before the Wednesday game, after the Wednesday game.
Well, not at all.
Not at all. So we should see you sometime later in the week, Skeet.
Look forward to it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.